This is Audible.
A long time ago, in a galaxy far, far away. Listening Library presents Star Wars Pirate's Price by Lou Anders. Read for you by Jim Cummings. Prologue. The Idiot's Hand. Oh, the stories I could tell. So many of them true. Hondo Onaka to Ezra Bridger. As far as wretched hives of scum and villainy went, Bazine Nital thought that Black Spire Outpost seemed friendlier than most. Certainly the Trandoshan running the supply company was more than willing to point her in the direction of her quarry. He didn't even ask her why she was looking for the Weequay. He just sold out his neighbor for a few credits. She moved through the crowded streets. Although she looked striking in her black leather skullcap and Rishi Eel ink-tipped fingers, no one paid her any attention. The locals were used to all manner of beings coming and going. Still, Bazine knew better than to turn her back on any of them, especially not when she was so close to her goal. She had been a long time getting there. After being led on a chase across the galaxy, she had tracked the Millennium Falcon to the planet Batuu and its infamous port, Black Spire Outpost. Glancing above the roof line of the buildings, Bazine could see how the place found its name. Rising above the shops and dwellings were the petrified trunks of what were once giant trees that had dominated the skies of that world. Now their blackened remains stood as silent sentinels on the outskirts of the town. The outpost was not an easy place to find unless you knew about it first. It was located where the unknown regions met wild space, a stopover for smugglers and those of less savory occupations, a place for rogues and opportunists, con artists, thieves, and of course, pirates. So it made a sort of sense that her target would be there. After all, the infamous Hondo Onaka had been all those things and more. Bazine's intelligence had told her that the notorious Weequay scoundrel was there on Batuu, where he was running a shipping operation called Onaka Transport Solutions. Doubtless it was a thin front for a smuggling operation, but it didn't matter to Bazine what it was. She wasn't interested in his services, just his ships, or rather, one of them in particular. One very special ship. She found the old pirate in a busy cantina, where a repurposed RX series pilot droid was playing upbeat music to an audience that mostly ignored it. But there was Hondo. He was sitting at a corner table playing Sabacc with a nervous-looking Ithorian, a furry Yarkora, and a grinning Swerton. Surprisingly, the Weequay didn't even have his back to the wall. If she had gone there to kill him, he would already be dead. Fortunate for him, then, that she wasn't planning to. At least she wouldn't unless she had to. And that remained to be seen. Still, the way he had his back to half the room struck Bazine as unnecessarily careless and ridiculously trusting. It certainly spoke to his legendary overconfidence. In fact, Hondo wasn't so much sitting in his chair as sprawling in it, a drink in one hand and three Sabacc cards in the other. He wasn't playing it close to the vest either, but swinging his Sabacc cards in time with the music. As she approached him from one side, Bazine could easily glance at his hand. He had a two, a three, and the face card known as a Psylop, sometimes called the Idiot. He was grinning like one too, although, judging from the pile of credit chips on the table, it looked as though the Swerton was the one who was winning the most. My friends, said Hondo, his voice ringing out with a happy lilt that was almost musical. I cannot tell you how much it pains me to take all of your credits today. But you make it too easy. And, as my sweet mother used to say, if you are going to bet, bet big. He tossed an impressive handful of credit chips onto the growing pile in the center and waited for the others to ante up. You're bluffing, growled the Arthurian from one of his twin mouths. I never bluff, Hondo replied. Then, after a slight pause, he added, except maybe for those occasions when I do, but this is not one of them. Another pause. As far as you know, which is not very far. So you are bluffing? Asked the Arthurian, confused. How can you be sure? I could be bluffing about bluffing, said Hondo. Or bluffing about that. Bah, growled the Arthurian from both mouths at once. But when the Arcora spotted Basine, it gave a little start, and it amused her to wonder which of his two stomachs had done a flip. What is it? Said Hondo. Have I got something on my face? I mean, beside my so very attractive frills? He brushed the backs of his fingers across the barbs that grew from his jowls. They had gotten longer as he had gotten older. Perhaps he thought they made him look distinguished. But then he caught sight of the newcomer out of the corner of his eye. Oh, we have company, don't we? Hondo said. He swung his legs around and turned in his chair to face her. Well, well, won't you join us for a game? Basine Nital. She couldn't help cocking an eyebrow at that. You were expecting me? Basine asked. You or someone like you, said Hondo. I figured someone would show up eventually. Very well, she said. Then you know I'm looking for... Not here, not here. Hondo waved a hand dismissively. He stood, scooping up his remaining credit chips and depositing them in a pocket of his jacket. Hey, objected the Swerton. Play your hand first. Bah, said Hondo. I smell bigger profits than these. Just count yourself lucky I did not take all of your money today. Despite the Swerton's face being split in a perpetual grin, Basine didn't think he looked happy about this. You were bluffing, weren't you? You would have lost the hand, he growled. But Hondo was already rising. I suppose we will never know, my friends. He was bluffing, said Basine. I saw his cards. Hondo coughed in embarrassment. What? Nonsense. Never. But, my dear, may I suggest we move to another table, where we can talk without this riffraff overhearing? He gestured to indicate his companions. Riffraff! Barked the Arthurian, and the Swerton frowned. But the Yarkora rose when they did. Basine thought something passed between Hondo and the furry little alien. A nod, perhaps. But then Hondo strode toward a table at the far side of the room, and she hurried to keep up in case he was making a run for it. He didn't seem to be. You were playing with a Swerton, observed Basine. So, said Hondo, I play with everybody who has credits to risk. You do know that some Swertons have the ability to subconsciously affect probability, she asked. Hondo stopped in his tracks. What? No, he said, scowling. I thought he was just lucky. Oh, well, that explains some things. Live and learn, they say. So, can I get you a drink? He gestured to a bizarre array of taps that lined two opposite walls of the room. Basine noticed that the tap handles were all handmade, each one unique. Obviously, they'd been scavenged from different objects over the years, from droid arms to what she thought might be an antique lightsaber handle. But then Hondo was talking again. I can recommend the Fuzzy Tauntaun, he said. No, she said firmly.
Are you sure? I have a wonderful relationship with the owner, Agagera. She puts all of my drinks on my tab, and then I tear up my tab. It's such a good arrangement, at least for me. I'm not sure how she feels about it, but you can feel free to order what you like. Cost is literally no object.
Basine frowned. I'm here for business, not pleasure. Hondo held a hand to his chest as though he were deeply offended by that.
I'm shocked. Shocked at your misunderstanding, he said. Surely you must know that business is pleasure.
If you say so.
I do. And I am an expert on these things. But here we are.
Hondo had led her to a table in a far corner of the room. This time, the pirate did place his back to the wall, forcing Basine to sit with hers to the crowd. The move was intended to put her at a disadvantage. It didn't. Basine could handle herself anywhere, and she'd been in plenty of establishments rougher than this cantina. Plus, there was a certain confidence that came from wearing thermal detonators in your shoes. She leaned across the table and stared into the goggles over the Wee Kwei's eyes. I'm looking for a ship, she said.
Oh, yes, said Hondo, smiling. Straight and to the point. I like that about you. And Unoka Transport Solutions stands ready to serve you. We have plenty of ships. I'm sure we can provide any solution you might need for... well, for transport, obviously.
I didn't come here in need of a smuggler, she said.
Smuggler?
Hondo waggled his fingers in the air and made a face like he had a bad taste in his mouth.
Why, the very word is an affront. No, I am merely an honest, dishonest businessman making his way in a harsh galaxy the only way I know. The way my mother taught me. Not a simple slimo smuggler scum.
Let me clarify, said Basine. We both know that I'm not here for your services. I don't need anything transported, smuggled, or not.
No, said Hondo. No. You are here for something greater. Let us stop pretending. You are here for that most amazing treasure. A real wonder in a galaxy full of wonders. You, my friend, are after the Millennium Falcon.
Basine was genuinely surprised. How did you know? Hondo shrugged.
Well, word gets around when one searches as much as you have done. And I am always interested in news when it carries with it the potential for profit.
So do you have it?
Who wants to know? I assume you are not looking for it for yourself. You have an employer, do you not?
That's my business. It's not your concern. Hondo held up a finger.
But it is my concern, insofar as this. Can whoever is paying you pay me? More to the point, can they pay me a lot?
Basine nodded. It wasn't her credits, after all. Hondo's smile showed all his teeth.
Good, good, he said happily. Then we have something to talk about. Now, supposing I have the Falcon, or I know what it is. We must talk about a fair price for such a famous ship.
Basine started to speak, but Hondo cut her off.
Oh, no, not so hasty, he said. You must understand, the Millennium Falcon is not a prize easily won. It is no ordinary ship, and if there is a chance that I will part with it, you must first understand what this means to me to say goodbye. You must know its value to me personally before I can name my asking price. To do that, you must know something of my own history with this legendary vessel. Are you sure you won't have that drink? The fuzzy tauntaun, or maybe a carbon freeze? No? Well then, settle back and prepare to be wowed as the great Hondo Onaka tells you a story. I remember it like it was many years ago. Because it was. Ah, yes. The first time that I ever saw the Millennium Falcon. A ship so fabulous. I knew right away that I had no choice but to try to steal it for myself. Basine raised a painted eyebrow at this, but she settled in as Hondo had suggested. After all her travels, it looked like she was going for another ride. Part 1. A Ship to Remember. Chapter 1. Awake and Crashing Beautifully. The day started out like so many others. I woke up in a strange spacecraft. I was alone in the cockpit. The control console was smoking and sparking. Crackle, crackle, fizzle, spark. Oh, and it seemed that two Imperial TIE fighters were shooting at me. It was all very exciting. How did I get there? I had only the vaguest memory. I recalled something about a party, excitement, and dancing. Oh, yes, and a strange drink called Sarlacc juice. In hindsight, I don't recommend it. Oh, and I think there was an Imperial garrison commander. He was the one doing the dancing. Because I asked him to. By asked, you understand. I mean, I was firing blaster bolts at his feet, and he was hopping about so as not to get shot in the foot. It was so amusing. For me, at least. But perhaps he was not having as much fun. Ah! So, that explained why the Imperial TIE fighters were shooting at me. Well, there is always a price for a good time. And this was another good time. But all good times must end. And the strange ship didn't look like it was going to last much longer. Not with the smoking and the sparking and the shooting. And everything coming apart around me. So, I looked for a place to land. There was a planet up ahead. The Navi computer said it was Galagolos 5. Do you know it? It is one of those swampy, stinky planets. Not much to look at, and you have to be careful where you put your feet. But beggars cannot be choosy when their ships are on fire, I always say. So, I sat down. I went careening through the atmosphere, black smoke billowing behind me. It must have really been quite a sight. And do you know, it was a perfect 3-point landing. By that I mean, I hit 3 separate points before I finally came to rest. What was left of the ship skidded to a stop right in an empty docking bay. At least I think it was empty. There were some bang, crash, crunch, crunch noises at the end before I stopped moving. I hopped out quickly. The service droids were getting excitable. "Sir, sir, you can't talk here," they said, rushing up to me and waving their metal arms about. I tossed them a handful of what might be credit chips, or maybe just pieces of the control console. "Keep the change," I said. Then I rushed through the doors before they could stop me, and I was in the spaceport proper. I hoped to quickly lose myself in the crowd. Oh, it was a busy place for such a stinky, swampy planet. That was good. But the air was all sweaty and wet, sticky, sticky. Nothing like the dry heat of my beloved Florum. It was no matter. I didn't plan to stick around for long. But to get off that stinky ball, I would need a new ship. That was, of course, merely a momentary setback for a great pirate such as myself. And there I was lucky enough to have crashed in a spaceport. Opportunities abounded for the unscrupulous and the bold. And I am both of those things. I began to look around. So many people, and I did not know any of them. The day was alive with possibility. I had a feeling that something was bound to happen. And it wasn't long before something did. You see, as I walked through the crowded streets of the Galagolos spaceport, I heard a shout of alarm. It was coming from an alleyway.
There was a young woman, human as far as I could tell. What did she look like? Like any human. She was about so tall, with hair. I saw that she was being menaced by two nasty-nosed Clodagrans. "Go away and leave me alone," she said. And though she might have been afraid, her voice was strong and determined. Of course, that was none of my concern. It is a rough galaxy after all, and we all must learn to take care of ourselves. Which is what my sweet mother said, before she threw me out the first time. So away I walked. But as I continued on, I noticed the unwelcome presence of stormtroopers. The bucketheads were moving around the spaceport. They seemed to be asking questions, talking to the locals, and I, Hondo, was getting funny looks and fingers pointing in my general direction. Were the stormtroopers looking for me? Well, I did arrive in a ship shot down by TIE fighters. It was just possible that the two things might be somehow related. I needed some way to appear less conspicuous. The bucketheads were probably looking for a lone weakway who matched my description. Well, I could not change my looks, but perhaps I could do something about that lone part. An idea occurred to me. So I turned and headed back to the alley where I had seen the woman. She was still struggling with the Clodagrans. In fact, a fight had broken out. I had to admire the way she was holding her own, even when it was two against one. And when fighting Clodagrans, the odds are even worse than usual, because they have twice as many arms. "Hold it right there, you ruffians!" I yelled, reaching for my blaster. There was only one problem with that. I did not seem to have my blaster anymore. I must have lost it in the Imperial garrison. It's these little details that will get you into trouble, my friend, every time. "Who the criff are you?" growled one of the Clodagrans as I stood pointing my empty fingers at him. "Who am I?" I said. "Why, it is me, Hondo Onaka. Never heard of you." Now, I admit I was stunned by that. "Never heard of Hondo Onaka, the famous pirate? My exploits are legendary." When that received only a blank stare, I continued, "Why, I once had a crew that was feared throughout the galaxy. I was notorious, famous, infamous. I have captured a Sith. I have fought with and against Jedi. I was a friend to Jango Fett and Obi-Wan Kenobi both. Why, my bulbous-nosed friends, you have never met anyone as interesting as I." The two Clodagrans just glanced at each other and shrugged. I turned to the young woman, but she gave me an apologetic look as well. "Sorry," she said.
"Not ringing a bell?" I asked.
"Not even a tiny one?"
"Jingle, jingle."
"Jingle?"
"Nothing. Just blank stares. It was too much." "The galaxy has such a short memory," I sighed.
Then I reached out and grabbed each of the Clodagrans by their sticky bulbous noses and I smashed their heads together. "Smash, smash! Run!" I shouted at the woman as the Clodagrans fell to the ground. And then we were running, the young woman and her daring rescuer. "Down!" she yelled, shoving me aside. Twin blaster bolts flew over my head. Pew, pew, they went. I saw the blast marks sprout on the wall like little black flowers of death, appearing centimeters from where I had been. So it seemed that she was saving me. And then we were running again. Hondo Onaka and his daring rescuer. Well, wasn't that an interesting day? Fortunately, we were both fleet of foot. We soon outdistanced the Clodagrans. When there was no sign of our pursuers, it seemed safe to stop running. We paused in a narrow alleyway, strewn with refuse from a filthy diner, and we leaned against a wall, slick with swampy humidity, to catch our breaths. "Thank you for stepping in," she said.
"For stepping in what?" I asked, checking my boot.
"You can never be sure on Galagolos." But then I realized she was thanking me for helping her, the noble way I had put myself forward.
You are welcome, I said. But you were doing quite well yourself. You must have some training in the martial arts. It is hard to fight a species with so many arms. Thankfully, they do not have so many legs, or we might not be as fortunate to have outrun them. She gave a little laugh, and I asked, but why were they bothering you? Something haunted passed across her face then, but she shook her head and said, probably they just wanted credits. Credits? I said, my ears pricking up. Do you have credits? The suspicion in her eyes wounded me, so I let it go. I am sorry, I was just making conversation. Permit me to introduce myself. I am Hondo Onaka. The famous pirate, she finished for me. So, you have heard of me after all, I said, brightening. No, she said, taking the wind out of my solar sails. I'm just repeating what you said. What I said, yes, I sighed. As we talked, we began to walk, heading back toward the docking bays. Forgive me for asking, she said, but why would a pirate come to my assistance? Isn't that a little noble for a buccaneer? But a pirate is noble, I replied, at least when he wants to be. Have you not heard of a pirate's honor? It is a wonderful thing, like the honor of thieves. And anyway, Hondo has always had a soft spot for the underdog. As we moved through the streets of the spaceport, I saw the stormtroopers again, and I got nervous. But my hunch was correct. The bucketheads walked right past me without giving me a moment's thought. They were looking for a desperate fugitive, not a dashing man walking and talking with a young woman like they were old friends. My deception had worked. We got to the docking bay, and I remembered I was there for a new ship. It was time to part company. I turned to take my leave of the woman, but she was looking at me searchingly, with her deep, intelligent eyes. But you are a pirate, aren't you? She asked. And you knew how to handle the cladograms, so maybe you can help me with something else. I'm looking for a specific ship. It's very important that I find it quickly. If you could accompany me, I might have a need for someone like you. Have need of me? I said. Hondo is not a lackey. Were you not listening? I once ran the famous Onaka gang. I am not just some piece of hired muscle. I thought you had a soft spot for underdogs, she said. It is not that soft, I said. I am very sorry, my dear, but one rescue is enough, and I have my own problems. I have engaged in quite enough heroics for today. What about your pirate's honor? She said. I snorted. That is the wonderful thing about a pirate's honor. Conveniently, it turns on and off, as needed. Turn on, turn off. Turn on, turn off. This morning, I am honorable. This afternoon, I am a scoundrel. And I think I am ready to be a scoundrel again. And then I left her there, looking surprised and maybe a little stung. And I went off on my own once more. Did I feel bad about it? Perhaps. But I confess I was still grouchy that no one there had heard of me. Me. The leader of the once-feared Onaka gang. Me, the pirate who once held Count Dooku, Obi-Wan Kenobi, and Anakin Skywalker hostage all at the same time. And stayed friends with two of them. In fact, I once kidnapped Ahsoka Tano and her 6 Jedi younglings, and then I rescued Ahsoka Tano and her 6 Jedi younglings from another kidnapping all in the same week. Come to think of it, for a notorious pirate, I sure helped the good guys out of tough times on many occasions. And I only caused one or two of those occasions myself. I even fought in the liberation of Lothal. Now that I mention it, I'm still waiting on payment for some of my services. Plus, I am the only one in the galaxy who ever found the lost treasure of Kanata's castle. All that. And the young lady didn't know who I was. How could the galaxy forget so much? Now, this may come as a surprise, because I am always such an upbeat guy, jolly hondo. But being alone on a strange planet and not being recognized made me feel something. It had been some time since I parted ways with my fellow Weequay. I had lost my pirate empire. I had lost my wonderful base on Florum. I had even lost dear Pig Muckmuck, my Kowakian monkey lizard. Let me tell you, you never truly appreciate a monkey lizard until it is gone. And I should know. I've lost a few. So I was adrift. I had been going it alone, by myself, making my way as a small-time pirate, but once I was the scourge of the galaxy. Oh, how far the mighty had fallen. There was a hole in my heart that needed to be filled, and it would not be filled by being that young woman's goon. No, I needed a ship, the kind of ship I could use to get a new crew. Then I would be back on top. Then I would make the galaxy remember me again. So I went to the docking bays, and I began to look for the perfect vessel to fly me away from that swampy, stinky planet. The first ship I found was too small. The next ship was too big. I needed a ship that was just right. And there, in the third bay, was the most magnificent ship ever. But it was heavily guarded. So I went to the fourth bay. And there she was. At a glance, she looked like any other YT-1300 Corellian freighter. Not too special, right? But then I saw there was something different about her. She'd been altered in several ways, and I had a pirate's hunch, a feeling, if you will, that there was more under the access panels that was not showing. You know the ship I mean? It's not hard to guess. Of course, at the time, I did not yet know its name, but it was the Millennium Falcon. And I must say, my old heart began to go pitter-pat, pitter-pat, pitter-pat. And I felt a hole in my soul, the big, gaping hole. I knew then it was a ship-sized hole, because with the right vessel, a person can do anything. And if that person happens to be Hondo or Nokka, why, then he can do anything else, too. And that was the right vessel. Well, there was only one thing to do in response to such sublime grandeur. I, Hondo or Nokka, would have to steal the ship for myself. The boarding ramp was, of course, closed, but I am somewhat more experienced than most in the matter of shall we say, liberating starships from their former owners. And so I know little tricks you may not be aware of. For instance, few people know that there is a small access hatch adjacent to the boarding ramp on the YT-1300 light freighter. And I was going to make use of it. The Hondo Onaga method of starship liberation involves some wiggle and some waggle. First, the wiggle. I reached into my pocket. I pulled out a small but very valuable pouch. With such a pouch, a pirate can make himself welcome anywhere. You see, it contained a selection of key bypasses of various sizes. And the key bypass is a very useful tool. I selected a long one. This I slipped into the seam of the access hatch. And with a wiggle of my fingers, I quickly used it to slice through the lock. Then it was time for the waggle. Making sure I was unobserved, I hoisted myself into the hatch. It was tight going, but I didn't have to go very far in. Just far enough that I could reach the ship's computer systems. Then from the pouch I took another device. A data spike. Most people would use the data spike to try to override the ship's defenses. Sure, if you want to do it the most pedestrian way. But I am Hondo Onaga, I did not try to override the ship's systems, no. I tried to make the ship like me. So I put all the great things about Hondo Onaka into the ship's memory. And I told it how much fun it would be to let me in. That was the waggle. And to my satisfaction, I heard the pop of compressed air releasing and the welcome vroom noise of the boarding ramp lowering for me. And so soon, I was in the cockpit. Right away, I began to input the pre-launch sequences. My fingers itched to take the control wheel. But despite bypassing the security and sweet-talking the computer, I found the controls were temperamental. The programming of the ship's computer unorthodox. It was almost as if the ship was still reluctant to let me take her. Still, some of the modifications were most impressive. It was just going to take some getting used to on both our parts. But I suspected it would pay off. And fortunately, I would have all the time in the galaxy. Or so I thought. I heard the babble-babble of voices. They were coming up the boarding ramp. That was most unfortunate. The previous owners of the ship had returned before I had finished stealing it. I realized then that I should have raised the ramp first thing. It is these little details that will get you into trouble every time. Think fast, Hondo, I told myself. I did one more thing to the ship's controls, a kind of insurance policy for later, and then I looked around for a place to hide. Something very large and very irritated was making a growling, groaning noise. Well, I don't like the smell of this muckball any more than you do, Chewie, someone else answered. But we'll be leaving just as soon as our passenger gets settled. And then I heard their footsteps going to the cockpit. I wondered what a Chewie was. It sounded like something to eat. But alas, I could not wait around to find out. I needed off that ship and fast. So I started to emerge from my hiding spot and make my exit, but then I heard a third person coming up the corridor. Obviously, it was the passenger who had hired the ship. And then, oh no, there was the vroom, vroom of the boarding ramp rising and the vroom of the ship's engines powering up. We were taking off. I had no way out without being seen. I was trapped. And just like that, I, Hondo Onaka, went from being a famous pirate to a mere stowaway. Well, wherever we were going in that magnificent modified freighter, I hoped it was someplace interesting.
Chapter 2. Out of the food unit, into the trash compactor. Well, we were off in no time, zipping through space, going who knew where. What an adventure it was. But so far, I did not see a way to make a profit. In fact, if I wasn't careful, there was a good chance I might find myself tossed out an airlock. And that, my friend, was not an experience I was keen to have. I mentioned that the ship had been modified quite extensively. Fortunately for me, one of the many changes was that she was riddled with hidden compartments. Doubtless they were meant for smuggling contraband. But now I was smuggling myself in them. Never let it be said that I don't appreciate irony. And please do not insult me by asking how I, Hondo Onaka, greatest pirate in the galaxy, was able to find these compartments if they were hidden. Come now. There is not a trick in the book I have not tried myself. I know a hidden compartment when I see one. Or rather, when I don't see one, if you catch my meaning. So I stayed quiet and hidden. And I used my ears to find out what I could. And I peeked through the tiny cracks in my hidden spot. For a bit, I didn't see anything or hear very much. Just the routine conversations coming from the cockpit.
Velocity indicator, this and acceleration compensator, that. What's that warning light doing, Chewie? Brah! That sort of thing, blah, blah, blah. But once the course was laid in and the ship was on its merry way, its pilots began to move around. It seemed there were only two of them, plus their passenger. Perhaps if I needed to and I had the element of surprise, I might be able to overpower them and take control of the vessel for myself. It is good to keep your options open. All right, lady, said a man. We've cleared the atmosphere. So now, how about you tell us what's so important about the third moon of Dandu that you're willing to pay 10,000 just to leave right away?
10,000 for a ride? That was a grossly inflated price for a relatively short trip.
Whoever the pilot was, he was ripping off his passenger. I admired him instantly. Also, now I knew that we were going to the third moon of Dandu, and very rapidly. That was interesting. As my sweet mother once told me, Hondo, someone else's urgency is your opportunity. Perhaps I could find a way to profit yet from that day. So I settled in to listen carefully.
Dandu's third moon is just the first stop, said someone else. The voice was that of a young woman, and it was very familiar. I began to suspect that I had heard it before, just a little while before. Destiny sometimes throws the strangest things our way, does she not?
What do you mean, first stop? Asked the man,
and he didn't seem too happy about it.
But then he had not seemed happy about anything since I first heard him board the ship. He was kind of a grumpy guy. Now look here, lady, you only paid me enough for one flight.
Actually, she had paid him enough for three.
Oh, how I admired him!
I don't have any more credits, the woman said, and I felt my interest in the conversation dipping. But if you listen to what I have to say, I can promise you a whole lot more than just 10,000.
Suddenly, my interest was back, and growing. I don't know about this, said the man. I don't like jobs that change the terms after we're underway.
If you'll just hear me out, said the woman. To begin with, my name is Marjo Rielu, and my business, let's just say I'm a fellow scoundrel like yourselves.
What makes you think we're scoundrels?
Mostly the reputations you've been spreading yourselves, said Marjo.
Laughter from the Chewy. Yeah, yeah, yuck it up, the man replied. Then to the woman he said, go on.
Well, the truth is that I'm after a huge score.
How huge? Said the man, straight and to the point.
A scoundrel after my own heart. Huge, Marjo said. Bigger than huge. A collection of Novian rubies being kept in a safety deposit box in a shielded vault on Guangdin.
Now that was interesting.
Novian rubies. They are very rare. Very valuable. In fact, no one had seen any Novian rubies in over 30 years. The pirate who could steal them would have quite the prize indeed.
But the man wasn't having it. Well, that's it. We're out, he said in his gruff voice.
No, wait, began the woman.
Lady, he interrupted. Everyone knows the undervaults of Guangdin are impregnable. You can't break in there. It's impossible. I knew whatever you were going to say was too good to be true.
They're impregnable, yes, said Marjo. But they're easy to get into if you have a key. There was a pause, during which I could almost hear wheels turning in the man's mind.
And you have the key?
He asked. That's why we're going to the third moon of Dandu, Marjo explained. Because the owner of the safety deposit box is on the moon right now.
Well, isn't that great? I suppose he's going to just give it to you?
Well, no, said Marjo. I thought we'd steal it from him.
We, huh? Said the man. Sorry, lady. You hired me to be your pilot, not your thief or smuggler. I'll take you as far as the moon, but then you're getting off. I assumed you'd jump at the chance, she said. Isn't this the sort of thing you do all the time?
I like jobs where I get paid up front. And passengers who are straight with me. Picking heists that have no hope of being pulled off isn't my idea of a good time.
But I have to get inside that deposit box. I have to. Please.
Well, the woman sounded pretty desperate. She must have wanted those rubies for something very important. And where there is great desperation, there is also great opportunity. So I took that moment to reveal myself. Emerging from my hiding place, I cried, "Hello, friends. This is your lucky day. You need a pirate for that job. My name is Hondo Onaka, and I just happen to be such a pirate." Well, you can imagine I made quite an entrance. Three jaws dropped at once. The woman's, the man's, and the big furry brown creature's, which I now recognized. Suddenly, all the growls and grunts made sense. It was a Wookiee. Unfortunately, I found myself looking at the business end of a blaster and a bowcaster. "Who the blazes are you?" the man said. He was young, with brown hair, wearing a cropped brown jacket, knee-high boots, and a thigh holster. His outfit had a kind of slapdash, swashbuckling look to it that I appreciated, the connoisseur of fashion that I am. "Did you not listen? I am Hondo Onaka, here to solve your problems. But just whose blaster bearer do I have the pleasure of staring down?" "The name's Solo, Han Solo. And this is Chewbacca. But wait, I'm the one asking the questions here, mister. How did you get on my ship? I don't take kindly to stowaways."
"A stowaway," I said. "Why, the very word is distasteful in my mouth, even if it is circumstantially true. But I am no mere stowaway. I am a pirate, a great pirate. And today, I am the answer to your prayers."
"I didn't pray any," said Solo.
Then his eyes widened in sudden realization. "A pirate, eh? You weren't stowing away. I bet you were trying to steal my ship when we came back." "See," I said, "you've only just met me and already I am demonstrating the very credentials you are looking for."
Well, the man made a face at that, the kind of face that says, "Let's just shoot him now and toss him out the airlock later."
I thought it better to move the conversation forward, so I glanced around.
"This is a very unusual freighter. May I know the name of this fine vessel?"
"You haven't heard of her?" said Solo, looking a little bit crestfallen. "This is the Millennium Falcon."
"The Millennium Falcon? What a coincidence," I cried. "My last ship was called the Centennial Peregrine."
"No, it wasn't," he objected. "Why not?" I said. "You can't prove it wasn't. Anyway, I stole it and crashed it in the same day. After that, it is a small thing to name it to. Or do you want it to have died without a name?"
"I'm sure whoever you stole it from had their own name for it."
"You raise a good point, my friend. With such clever insights, I can see this is going to be a very profitable partnership."
"This isn't going to be anything," he turned to the Wookiee. "Chewie, toss our pirate here out an airlock."
A furry hand grabbed me by the collar.
"Now, if a Wookiee wants to toss you out an airlock, out of an airlock you go. Possibly in several pieces." So I turned to the woman, this Majo Rilu. She was looking at me, overcome, I assume, with joy at seeing me again, but also, it must be admitted, with some confusion.
"My dear friend, it is good to see you again so soon. Before I am unceremoniously and so rudely excluded from your expedition, will you please tell this fine Wookiee that you asked me for my help earlier this very day?"
"I did ask for his help," Majo said to Chewbacca, "after he helped me against some angry Clodagrans. But You didn't know I was here. You couldn't have. You couldn't have planned to steal the very ship I was chartering.
I didn't need to know. That's how good I am. Things just have a way of working out when Hondo is involved. At that moment, a voice came over the ship's comm. Attention, unidentified Corellian freighter. You are believed to be harboring a suspect, wanted in conjunction with an incident at Imperial Garrison Bardalberon 7.
What?
Said Solo. I'm not harboring any suspect. He looked at Majo Relu.
I've never been to Bardalberon 7 in my life, she said.
Never?
He asked. I don't get around much, she replied. Then he looked at me.
It's you, isn't it? What did you do to get them so riled up?
I gave him my most endearing smile. Whatever it was, I'm sure it was a misunderstanding. But there is no sense crying once the banter milk is spilt. Perhaps now would be a good time for you to demonstrate just how fast the Millennium Falcon is.
Or maybe I just hand you over to them.
Then Solo turned and ran to the cockpit. We all followed him, where we saw, making its approach toward us, a TIE SH shuttle. With that ship, the Empire could cut its way in if we did not open an airlock. But I had no fear. I knew Han Solo was bluffing. After all, he was the pilot of a ship with many, many compartments for smuggling contraband. Obviously, he was a man who wanted to keep his secrets. I doubted very much that he wanted the Empire boarding the Falcon any more than I did. Am I the only thing on the ship for the Empire to find? I asked. And again I flashed him my so endearing smile. Is there anything else you want to keep out of their hands? Surprisingly, it was Majo Relu who answered first. They can't search us, she said. Really, they can't. She sounded so very insistent. I wondered what she was carrying, and where she was carrying it. Solo looked from me to the woman and back. Then he turned to look at his big, fuzzy friend. The Wookiee shrugged his enormous shoulders. Perfect. This is just perfect. Han Solo paused and pointed his finger at me in a most annoying fashion. Whatever happens, I'm holding you responsible for all of this. Solo activated his comm unit. Negative on that boarding. We have an escaped swarm of Sartuvian brain moths currently infesting our cargo hold. You wouldn't want to board us. Corellian fighter, that is not acceptable. Please stand by and prepare to be boarded.
I don't recommend it, stalled Solo. The brain moths haven't been fed in several rotations. They look pretty hungry for brains.
That is not our concern, said the voice on the comm. Our boarding party will be wearing their helmets. They're rated against Sartuvian brain moth bites. Now comply with our instructions, or we will open fire.
No, these have very big teeth.
Solo gave us an apologetic look.
Complained Chewbacca.
You want to give it a try? He asked the Wookiee. Do you think maybe they bought it? Asked Majo.
And then came that delightful choo-choo sound as our pursuers fired warning shots.
Does that sound like they bought it to you? Said Solo.
We're under attack.
Chapter 3. Han Solo flips out.
Choo-choo went the laser cannons. They were still warning shots, but soon they would be the real thing. Solo was powering up the hyperdrive as fast as he could and began to input the coordinates for Dandu. Meanwhile, I looked out the window and saw that the TIE shuttle was very close.
My friends, I said, now would be a good time.
Solo grumbled at that, but then he grinned.
I suggest you both hang on. You wanted to see what the Millennium Falcon can do? Baby, show them what you can do.
He flipped a switch. And the ship made a noise, a kind of powering down sound. It went boom, and nothing happened.
That is, most impressive, I said, trying my best to be positive in what must have been an embarrassing situation for him.
What? Solo hollered. Chewie, where's my hyperdrive?
He began to frantically flip switches. He even banged a fist on the console. Then he turned a face to me that was almost comical, it was so angry.
You messed with my ship, didn't you?
Choo-choo!
When the laser cannons. K-choom, k-choom. No more warning shots. The Falcon rocked under the blasts from the TIE's cannons.
I resent your implication, I said as I regained my balance. And here I thought we were starting to be friends.
K-choom, k-choom. Solo frantically flipped a few more levers.
We're not friends, he said. Now what did you do?
Not friends?
I was wounded. Companions, at least. Would you say we are friendly acquaintances?
No, shouted Solo. We aren't anything, now tell me what you did.
More laser cannons. More rocking of the ship.
What did you do?
Now that I think of it, I said, I might have placed an interrupt on the conduit to the hyperdrive or something.
An interrupt?
Or something.
To my ship?
In my defense, I thought you might be angry discovering me on your ship, and I might need some insurance.
That doesn't make me like you any better.
But it does make you need me now, I said.
Will you two stop arguing, said Marjo, and fix it.
I started to reach for the controls, but then I hesitated.
Not until he says that Hondo is coming with you. You all agree that I am a part of this big heist on the undervaults of Guangdin. We are equal partners in this endeavor.
I put on my best Sabah face. Or we can all sit here and wait to be boarded. If we are not blown apart first.
Solo looked like he would prefer to shoot me, but he growled, I'll consider it.
Well, that I can work with.
Good. Now fix my ship.
I scooted him out of the way. Scoot, scoot, scoot. And set about removing the interrupt on the conduit to the hyperdrive.
See? Already Hondo is helping the team. We're not a team, said Solo.
Brrrr, said Chewbacca.
You know I don't like people touching my stuff,
said Solo, and they shoved me rudely aside. But the hyperdrive powered up correctly under his hands. It made a pleasant humming sound.
Brrrr,
said Chewbacca. Don't thank him, said Solo. It's his fault it was broken in the first place.
We were shaken fiercely on our feet as the TIE shuttle fired at us at what was nearly close range.
Now is not the time to argue over who broke what, I said. You are going to show us what the Falcon can do?
Hang on, said Solo. This time for real.
Brah, brah, said Chewbacca.
And then we heard the wonderful phew. As the Millennium Falcon jumped into hyperspace.
We had made it!
Oh, that gets the heart pumping, I said as we all gazed at the welcome kaleidoscope of blue light swirling before us. I find last-minute escapes are always the best. Don't you agree?
Solo gave me another of his exaggerated stares. We wouldn't have had to make a last-minute escape if you hadn't sneaked aboard my ship in the first place.
True, true, I said. Fate has indeed brought us together.
That's not what I meant, said Solo. Chewie, we could still toss this joker out the airlock if we want.
Brrrr,
said Chewbacca with a nod. That was neither agreeing nor disagreeing, so I thought it best to move the conversation to better topics.
Tell us your plan, Marjo. Tell Hondo. How are we going to get on Ovian rubies, eh?
You know they're quite rare and valuable. Enough to make every one of us very rich.
At the word rich, I saw Solo's eyes screw up and go all far away. Greed is a wonderful thing.
especially if it stops a Wookiee from tossing you out an airlock.